This is Agriculture Today.
Again, the degree of this price increase, you know, relative to what I can make sense of on the fundamental side, you know, it does seem like there's more going on than just the concerns over crop conditions in the U.S. that we may have other things being built into this price run-up, particularly when we look at wheat.
Dr. Mark Welch is Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Grain Marketing Economist in College Station. Prices received by U.S. farmers moved higher in March, but input costs continue to climb, leaving the overall margin picture still tight. USDA said March prices received index for ag production up 1.1% from February, now 131.5%. While the prices paid index increased 0.5% to 160.4. Crop prices mixed. USDA said corn averaged 4.27 per bushel in March, up 16 cents from February. Soybeans, 11.10, up 50 cents. Wheat up 40 cents at 5.52. Rice moving the other direction, falling 60 cents from February, 11.70 per hundredweight. On the cost side, USDA said higher diesel, complete feed, gasoline, and LP gas prices more than offset declines in feeder cattle, concentrates, herbicides, and insecticides. Ratio of prices received to prices paid improved from 81 in February to 83 in March, but still remains well below the 97 mark from a year earlier. Well, global fertilizer markets remain under pressure as the Strait of Hormuz closure enters the 10th week. Josh Linville, StoneX, says shutdowns still disrupting major exporters, keeping sellers firm, even as many buyers hold back, hoping prices eventually ease. Nitrogen markets remain quiet on the surface, but supply problems still significant. Urea production in Europe running at about 75% of normal. Chinese exports not expected until August. Block shipments from Iran, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia tightening global trade flows. North America in a little better shape than much of the world. Most domestic demand for ammonia and liquid nitrogen has been met domestically. Linville's demand model suggests urea imports already in the pipeline should cover the normal spring needs if exports, diversions, or demand don't increase. Producers, though, who expect farmland values to rise, also showing a much stronger outlook on current conditions and farm finances. Purdue University's March Ag Economy Barometer said land value expectations lining up closely with broader differences in producer confidence. March barometer stood at 127. It's about 35% of respondents who expected land values to be a higher level a year from now. 10% expect values to be lower, and those expecting higher land values generally more optimistic across the survey. Well, U.S. farms, though, gain 11.8 cents from every dollar spent on domestically produced food. Now, this is from 2024. It's the latest from USDA's revised food dollar data. That means 88 cents goes to the marketing side of the food system. That includes transportation, processing, and retailing. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
My colleagues and I remain squarely focused on achieving our dual mandate goals of maximum employment and stable prices for the benefit of the American people.
Jerome Powell, in what will probably be his final press conference as chairman of the Federal Reserve.
The U.S. economy has been expanding at a solid pace. While job gains have remained low, the unemployment rate has been little changed in recent months. Inflation has moved up and is elevated, in part reflecting the recent increase in global energy prices. Today, the FOMC decided to leave our policy rate unchanged. We see the current stance of monetary policy as appropriate to promote progress toward our maximum employment and 2% inflation goals. Developments in the Middle East are contributing to a high level of uncertainty about the economic outlook, and we will remain attentive to risks to both sides of our dual mandate. I'll have more to say about monetary policy after briefly reviewing economic developments. Recent indicators suggest that economic activity has been expanding at a solid pace. Consumer spending has been resilient, and business fixed investment has continued to expand at a brisk pace. In contrast, activity in the housing sector has remained weak. In the labor market, the unemployment rate was 4.3% in March and has changed little in recent months. Job gains have remained low. A good part of the slowing in the pace of the job growth over the past year reflects a decline in the growth of the labor force due to lower immigration and labor force participation, though labor demand has clearly softened as well. Other indicators, including job openings, layoffs, hiring, and nominal wage growth, generally show little change in recent months. Inflation has moved up recently and is elevated relative to our 2% longer-run goal. Estimates based on the Consumer Price Index and other data indicate that total PCE prices rose 3.5% over the 12 months ending in March, boosted by the significant rise in global oil prices that has resulted from the conflict in the Middle East. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 3.2% over the 12 months ending in March. This relatively high rate largely reflects the effects of tariffs on prices in the goods sector. Near-term measures of inflation expectations have risen this year, likely because of the substantial rise in oil prices. Most measures of longer-term expectations remain consistent with our 2% inflation goal. Our monetary policy actions are guided by our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. At today's meeting, the committee decided to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 3.5% to 3.75%. The economic outlook remains highly uncertain, and the conflict in the Middle East has added to this uncertainty. In the near term, higher energy prices will push up overall inflation. Beyond that, the scope and duration of potential effects on the economy remain unclear, as does the future course of the conflict itself. We will continue to monitor the risks to both sides of our dual mandate. We are well positioned to determine the extent and timing of additional adjustments to our policy rate based on the incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. Monetary policy is not on a preset course, and we will make our decisions on a meeting-by-meeting basis. This is my last press conference as chair, and I will close with a few thoughts. First, I want to congratulate Kevin Warsh on his advancement out of the Senate Banking Committee this morning. This is an important step forward, and I wish him well as that process continues.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
The effects and the impact of climate change are real.
Interesting exchange between Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro and the administrator of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, in an appropriation subcommittee hearing.
You probably did see the report on Antarctica and the glaciers and melting and all this. It was an extraordinary documentary over this past weekend. This is an administration that is hell-bent, in my view, on ignoring science. Just 2 weeks ago, you reportedly attended a climate deniers conference. And in your remarks, you said, quote, "For those who wanted to criticize my appearance here before this group, it really shows the desperation of just how many walls have collapsed of this last line of defense," end quote. In Connecticut, we have seen increasing heat waves, extreme precipitation, devastating floods, impacting everything, farming, school closures, damaging homes and businesses. Climate change is harming our health and our environment, but is also harming Americans financially. This administration, however, is running the playbook on making the problem worse, focusing on policies that are handouts to the fossil fuel companies, like reversing the 2009 greenhouse gas endangerment finding, rolling back fuel emission standards for motor vehicles, and reducing methane leak monitoring requirements. The budget proposal reads like a climate change deniers manifesto. When climate change is flooding our streets, poisoning our air, driving up health care and disaster costs, how can the EPA justify abandoning that duty to protect Americans, to appease polluters under the false flag of economic growth?
Following the law, Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, where does it say anything about fighting global climate change? Loper Bright, Supreme Court case, you familiar with it?
No, I maybe others are. I'm not, but let me ask.
But that's really important. As a member of Congress, Loper Bright says that we as an agency don't have the authority to get creative. If Section 202 of the Clean Air Act.
No, but you don't have, excuse me, you do not have the right to say climate change does not exist, that it's a hoax, and that's where this administration is coming from.
I understand you're upset that you don't know what Loper Bright is. Do you know what the major policies doctrine is?
I'm upset because.
You know what the major policies doctrine is?
You know what, let me just.
You're a member of Congress. You should know.
Well, you have moved from someone who defended the environment to all of a sudden
being very defensive about not knowing the two biggest landmark Supreme Court cases of the last year with regards to your question.
You are very defensive about changing your policy and your positions with regard to the environment.
Okay.
Now, you just tell
me. You want
me
to tell you what the two biggest Supreme Court cases are of the last few years?
This is what I want you
Michigan
to tell
versus
me.
EPA.
Whoa.
West Virginia versus EPA.
You know, you're here because you need money from us. So halt for the second. And wait for the questions and answer the questions.
Well, I answered your question.
No, you didn't.
And you didn't like my answer because you don't know what Loper Bright is, because you don't know what the major policies doctrine is.
Chairman,
because you're asking me
questions.
You're asking me about Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, and you don't read it. You don't know what it says.
Listen, and what you want to do is to deny.
I actually read the law. I do my homework.
Really?
You're just somebody who likes to have the microphone on. You know what I have to do? I read the law.
No,
I read
Chairman,
the Supreme Court cases.
I don't have to listen to this, and I would say
no. What you should do for your constituents is actually read statute.
This budget is at real risk.
Read
Let
your Supreme
you.
Court.
This is the Appropriations Committee.
Oh, you
come
you're
here.
You care about
you
science. Now you're threatening to defund it.
Oh my God! No, you don't fund
because
science.
You don't know what Loper Bright is. Because
deniers.
You don't know what the major policies
you
doctrine
are
is. Your message
deniers.
To our folks at the EPA is that you want to defund us.
I don't have to listen to this BS.
The BS. You think I made up these cases?
Yeah, I think you have made up a whole lot of
BS. I made up Loper Bright. I made up West Virginia versus EPA. I made up Michigan versus EPA.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
By 1899, the people in the Bureau of Soils at USDA were at work on the first soil surveys of the United States, and they had sort of a mission to map and discover more about the nation's soil resources, where they were, what they were made of, how they formed, and especially what they were good for, you know, what can you grow, things like that. So trying to get the basics down on American soils.
Natural Resources Conservation Service recently celebrating 91 years. Dr. Shelby Calloway with NRCS.
In 1903, the Soils Bureau hired a new college graduate named Hugh Hammond Bennett, who went to work surveying soils all around the country, and soon all around the Western Hemisphere. He produced a lot. These are just some of his publications. And as you can see, he's mostly active sort of in the Southeast, but he was also active in Central America and in all around the Caribbean. This photo here is of an unlabeled slide I found in the archives that I think is of him as a young man somewhere in the Circum-Caribbean, somewhere they grow bananas at any rate. He was the first to map the soils of Cuba, so it might have been there. He also worked in the Panama Canal Zone, Puerto Rico, and several other places while surveying and mapping soils. Bennett was far and away the most important person in bringing this agency into being. And, you know, if you're like me, you get very suspicious whenever anyone says one person is critical to most anything, right? But his career really tracks pretty closely with the creation of this agency. Here he is in the Bureau of Soils in 1922. He's standing right behind the chief of the Bureau and his boss, Milton Whitney, with whom he often butted heads. Whitney's the one with the mustache in the middle, and Bennett's directly behind him. This is right out on the lawn here in front of where we are now. You can see there's the Washington Monument in the background and the edge of the old USDA building that was here before this one. As a consequence of what he saw all over the country surveying the land in the teens and 20s, Bennett began to notice alarming trends and became convinced that accelerated soil erosion brought on by inappropriate farming methods was a major problem in almost every section of the country. This photo is a hand-tinted lantern slide, by the way. That's where this little bit of color from that far ago comes. There's several of those in here. And it's, you know, it's a problem everywhere. So here, that's South Carolina. Here's another one. This is in California. Here's Washington State. And here's Connecticut. Who thinks about Connecticut when you think about soil erosion? But it's going on there, too. It's going on everywhere. At the USDA, and this is Georgia, I should say. At the USDA, Bennett increasingly focused his work on researching and documenting the ravages of soil erosion. He published and spoke widely on the issue. He was in the newspapers constantly, talked to anybody who'd listen. So much so that he was often described as a crusader. This, by the way, is Stewart County in southwest Georgia, probably the most dramatic example of the perils of erosion brought on by agriculture. The gullies there approached canyons in size and were so big they actually became a tourist attraction. They're still there, and you can visit a state park built around them now called Providence Canyon, all a result of erosion, not over millions of years, but beginning just kind of in the mid-1800s. So for scale, if you look up there in the middle, there's a house that kind of helps you appreciate how big this hole in the ground is. And I mention all this in part because we often associate the agency with the Dust Bowl and with wind erosion, but really, water erosion is far and away the bigger concern for Hugh Hammond Bennett. That sort of slow, relentless, waterborne sheet erosion that's impoverishing fields and farms and people across the entire country was the bigger evil, and that's the word he would use, evil, in part, because it, I think because it wasn't always dramatic, like a Dust Bowl or like these enormous gullies. It's kind of happening in the background constantly everywhere.
Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Why is that easing bias still ripe, given how different the inflation outlook is now versus a meeting or two ago? And what more would have to happen for it to get evicted?
Recent press conference involving the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell.
So that was, as you will recall, we had a discussion about that at the last meeting, and we talked about it in the press conference after the March meeting. We had the same today. We had quite a vigorous discussion about that very issue and the guidance, and is it still appropriate, and that kind of thing. And I would say that the number of people on the committee who either could support that language change, changing to a more neutral stance so that a hike is as likely as a cut, that number has increased over the intermeeting period, and it's easy to see why. I mean, it's a good question, right? You see, inflation has moved up over the interim a bit. Core inflation is 3.2 now, moving, albeit just a little bit, in the wrong direction. And we know that there will be, that there's headline inflation coming out of the Gulf, and we don't know how much that will be. We're going to need to see. So it makes all the sense in the world that people would look at that, and we'd have a vigorous discussion about that. You saw that three people dissented over the language. I think all of those people agreed with the Ray decision. So the majority of the committee did not want to do that, and I didn't think we needed to do it at this meeting. It really was just a question of why do we need to do that now? We have so much to learn. There's so much uncertainty about the path ahead. There doesn't need to be any rush to make that decision now, because what happens in the next 30, 60 days, even by the next meeting, could really change the picture around that language. So, it's a much closer thing on the committee than it was in March, and that makes all the sense in the world, it seems to me.
So, Claire Jones, Financial Times. Just going back to this issue of the easing bias, we've now got oil approaching $120 a barrel when it comes to the benchmark, Brent crude. If it stays around those levels 6 weeks from now, what would be your best guess as to whether the easing bias will still be in the statement? Thank you.
I wouldn't want to guess. Well, first of all, we're going to have new leadership in all likelihood by then, and new leadership's going to have a very important role to play in that. So I won't be standing here at this podium to answer your question. So I don't know. As I mentioned, that's all I can really say, is that we had a great discussion about that today. It's gotten to be a better question than the interim period. We had the discussion. The majority are still on the page of not feeling the need to move to that level, and I that's where I am. I get it, though. At a certain point, you would move, and that conceivably could come as soon as the next meeting.
Thank you. Just to follow up, the new leadership also seemed rather lukewarm on press conferences and on the dot plots. What would your advice to him be on these communication tools?
So I'm not going to give him any advice through you today here, but I think communications generally is, I think every incoming chair takes a look at communications, and it's a very healthy thing. I mean, communications it's very complex, and you can always be looking at new things, if that happens, it feels like it's going to happen. That's a completely appropriate thing.
Chair Powell, you'll go with Axios. Can you tell us if you've been in touch with incoming Chairman Warsh? To what extent is this a normal transition process versus all the things swirling around, something unusual, and what can we expect when he takes that podium in a few weeks?
I haven't seen him since seeing him at a dinner in January where I congratulated him and had a nice chat with him. Haven't seen him. I don't know what a normal process is. The last process was with Janet Yellen, with whom I had worked for 6 years, and so it was we were sitting down the hall from each other, so it was a very different thing. I think this is and will be a very normal, standard kind of a transition process. So that's what I expect. I have every reason to think it will be.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Department of Commerce continues to work around the clock to implement President Trump's America First trade policy.
Testifying before a House subcommittee on appropriations, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick.
Under Section 232, the Commerce Department is taking action on steel, aluminum, copper, pharmaceuticals, autos, semiconductors, and investigating other sectors to protect, reshore, and revive manufacturing. These actions have led to multi-billion dollar commitments to reshore steel and aluminum manufacturing and restore American excellence in critical industries. In the first year of his second term, President Trump has dramatically reduced the trade deficit, lowering imports and increasing exports. Exports went to $3.4 trillion, which is a 6% increase from 2024. And in 2025, the trade deficit was the lowest we've seen in 16 years. I'm proud of the role I played in negotiating our most important trade agreement, including the largest deal ever done, which was our trade deal and investment deal with the European Union. BIS is working hand in hand with the Department of Health and Human Services. We've arranged historic agreements to lower drug prices for American consumers, negotiating most favored nation deals, and ensuring Americans pay the lowest prices for innovative medicines. As a result of these deals, additionally, we have secured over $400 billion in commitments to reshore pharmaceuticals and manufacturing in America, those key pharmaceuticals. The budget includes a $215 million increase to BIS above the 2026 enacted level, which supports the hiring of hundreds of new special agent law enforcement officials to address the theft of American technological leadership by bad actors. These officers are critical to protecting and defending America's innovation. In ITA, we are driving record foreign direct investment, cracking down on harmful foreign trade practices, and supporting our 1.3 million American jobs with export and investment deals. In 2025, ITA helped Boeing, Wabtec, and other major American companies secure a record $244 billion in contracts with foreign public buyers. This exceeds the $17 billion that the Biden administration did in its first year. The budget includes a $10 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for trade enforcement in ITA and $100 million for the United States Investment Accelerator. The budget slashes unnecessary wasteful spending at NIST and other groups and eliminates the manufacturing extension partnership, which I'm sure we will talk about. At the USPTO, we are rapidly modernizing and leveraging technology to cut classification prep dramatically. We want to get rid of the massive backlog that we had and do a much better job. And finally, we have launched a new era of modernization of NOAA, where we're in the process of transferring the agency's IT system from a decades-old hardwired technology to the modern distributed cloud. This update will improve our forecasting capabilities, transform the way our forecasters do their jobs, and will make Americans safer. The budget also includes a $135 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for NOAA shipbuilding and our improvement of unmanned systems programs. For far too long, our nation was mired in status quo, leaving American consumers and producers alike with unfair, poorly implemented trade deals, outsourced jobs, and paltry investments that failed to meet our country's potential. President Trump is committed to ushering in a golden age of domestic commerce and bringing jobs back to the United States, and that's exactly what he's done in his first 15 months of this administration. I look forward to working with you as the department continues to spur economic growth and secure unprecedented prosperity for the American people.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.